Lee Kuan Yew's legacy goes far beyond tiny, prosperous Singapore. He had an impact throughout much of Asia, including the People's Republic of China. Keep in mind that the population of China is more than 250 times larger than that of Singapore's, and the government in Beijing is a one-party communist system, while Singapore has built itself up as the epitome of first-world capitalism. We've got Isaac Stonefish with us on the line from Washington to talk about all of this. He's the Asia editor at Foreign Policy Magazine. Isaac, what would you say is the most important thing that the giant communist China has learned from small, free-willing Singapore under the tutelage of Lee Kuan Yew?
I think the most important thing is that a Chinese-run state could be both modern and authoritarian. So put another way, Lee Kuan Yew made the world and made China safe for authoritarianism.
So do you think he was the man that woke China up to the joys of capitalism with that authoritarian kind of tweak to it?
I think if we were to give anyone outside of China credit for it, it would definitely be Li. In 1978, Deng Xiaoping, then China's paramount leader, wanted to take China away from the chaos and the madness of the Mao Zedong eras. And he went to Singapore and he was shocked. Deng had been to Singapore in the 20s when it was, you know, as desperately poor as China was. And he was just so surprised that a Chinese state could be prosperous and could be modern.
In the New York Times obituary, there's this incredible quote from Lee Kuan Yew about his governing style. He said, "If you think you can hurt me more than I can hurt you, try. There is no other way you can govern a Chinese society." What is he suggesting there?
I think what he's saying is that sometimes, both for Singapore, which is, I think, around 2/3 or 75% Chinese, and for countries like China, you do have to demonstrate that you're willing to commit violence or lock people up in order to get things done. He has another quote that is probably not apocryphal, where he talks about how Singaporeans are like dogs and have to be trained so that they don't pee or defecate in the elevator. So he, I think, was very, very firm believer in the necessity of training.
Oh, yeah, to say the least. So Singapore is a majority ethnic Chinese country, we should remember. Have you seen other ways that Lee's governing took hold in China, kind of his influence?
I think the idea of fighting corruption and also fighting corruption by paying people well is something that the current regime in China is looking into. You know, Lee Kuan Yew has had a famously high salary. His son, Lee Hsien-loong, is the highest paid head of state. The ministers make hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, because Lee Kuan Yew realized to get the best people, you had to pay them things competitive with the private sector.
Highest paid head of state in the world, right?
Yeah. Yes, I think by a large margin. Xi Jinping in January raised the salary from $1,000 a month to $1,800 a month, so a raise of 62%. And I think in China's long-standing anti-corruption campaign, they are starting to realize that you have to pay people things a little closer to what the private sector would give them.
Then there is the kind of political corruption side of the story. Lee Kuan Yew essentially created a one-party state in Singapore, but in recent years, Singaporean voters have now given more support to opposition politicians. So what do you think that says about the challenge ahead for the political successors in Singapore? And what do you think China's thinking as they look at this?
Lee Hsien-loong, Lee Kuan Yew's son, is realizing and has realized over the last couple of years since they had that disappointing victory where they only won, I think it was something like 60% of the vote. And they're realizing that they're going to need to give other things besides economic growth and stability and great infrastructure. And I think that's something that Beijing realizes as well, that, you know, just providing for a country's economy is not going to be enough. That said, I think Chinese leaders, both today and back with Deng Xiaoping in the 70s, realized that Singapore and China were very different. You know, Deng is quoted as sighing after meeting Li and thinking, oh, if I only had one Shanghai, which is still much bigger than Singapore, then I'd be able to change China. But I have 1,000 of them, and it's much, much more difficult.
Isaac Stonefish of Foreign Policy Magazine, thank you as always.
Thanks for having me.